I do not have dementia myself, but my husband does. He went from being a 77-year-old man who was incredibly fit, active, no underlying health issues at all. And then on the 19th of November 2019, he woke up with what is called post-operative delirium, and he never recovered. Now, it transpired that he had actually had dementia. It was there.
30 years of being together with somebody, and then that person catches dementia and you've never left.
I didn't find it fulfilling. That was horrible to watch that person deteriorate, but I would never have turned my back on him. Never. There is over 420,000 people in Australia with dementia now. It's anticipated in the next 25 odd years, there will be over 800,000 people. Anyone can have dementia. Babies, young children, teenagers, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. It is not confined to grandmothers and grandfathers and elderly parents.
You grew up with a Catholic background and you kind of sped away from it. All these years of relationship experience that you've got, what do you think is the problem with now's age relationship?
I just feel that...
In 30 seconds, if you could give an advice from your rich life that you've lived, what would you say? Welcome to the Discover You podcast. We're back today again with a special episode. I've got with me someone exceptionally special, as you know. We're here only getting the best of the best in terms of guests, and we're here to understand stories and understand this journey of fulfillment that we're all going through in life. I've got with me Jill.
Yes, hi.
How are you doing, Jill?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Are you excited to be here today?
I am, actually. Yeah? I think it's a fabulous opportunity to talk a lot about dementia, to raise the profile in the community, and go away to destigmatize the topic. And that's one thing I'm very focused on in my life at the moment.
Yeah.
Because it creates issues for people who have dementia and for carers and families. So
So this episode here is sponsored by Dementia Alliance, and I just want to shout out to them and everything they're doing for the Discover You podcast. And just to get started, Jill, I like, instead of introducing you to the guest and saying she's this, she's that, she's this, I like yourself to do that introduction and for you to let the guests, let the viewers know who you are.
Okay.
And so if I was to ask you a question and say, who's Jill?
Okay.
How would you answer that?
Oh, boy. She's pretty complex, but she's she's the crazy grandmother, and she's, but still an individual. And having gone through to reach my age, as I am now, I, like everyone else, have had the ups and downs.
Yeah.
But I like to think that I've had the resilience to come through them all. And I think that's pretty important. Now, where does it come from? I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I think that it's something that we just, as humans, kind of dig deep.
So you spoke about dementia earlier on, and I'm just curious to understand, where does your journey with dementia start?
Well, I can actually pinpoint the date that it started.
Really?
I can. I do not have dementia myself. Well, not that I know of.
Yeah.
But my husband does.
Yeah.
And he went from being a 77-year-old man who was incredibly fit, active, no underlying health issues at all, except he had arthritis in one knee.
Yeah.
So we went to the doctor. He wanted to get it fixed because he felt that was limiting him in his ability just to move around and live his life. So we went and went to the doctor, organised basically to have that knee replacement.
Wow.
He booked into the hospital. Everything was well. And then on the 19th of November 2019, he woke up with what is called post-operative delirium, and he never recovered.
Wow.
Just like that. Now, it transpired that he had actually had dementia. It was there.
Yep.
We wouldn't have known other than, well, who puts their keys down and can't find them? You know, where did I leave my book? Where are those keys? Silly little things that it happened to me, and it can happen to anybody. And after the surgery, and
that what was supposed to be a 4-day stay in hospital was a 2.5-week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told to take him home, that he will, once he's in his familiar surrounds, that he will come back to normal as normal was.
Yep.
But he didn't. So the anxiety, the hallucinations, the dreadful, dreadful situation that we found ourselves in
mm-hmm.
overnight.
Wow.
And that was not the norm for people who have dementia. It's a slow story. It can be little things. It goes from the keys to the this to the
yep.
lot of things. And it can take, I don't know, everyone's different, 2 years, who knows, till you get to a point that we have a real problem, whereas ours started straight away.
So you just got hit in the face straight
away. Absolutely.
No preparation, no nothing.
No, I had no experience with dementia.
Wow. At all.
No grandparents, no great uncles, no one in the family
yep.
that I had had any direct or indirect contact with that had so dementia.
What did that do to your family?
Oh, well, we had family interstate,
mm-hmm.
Grown children with families living in the territory,
mm-hmm.
and we were in a remote location in
the territory. Wow, even harder.
That was the challenge. There was no support. We had support. We have a family, a lovely tight-knit little community
yep.
that people would come and visit. Even as he was deteriorating,
yep.
he could still interact with people.
Yeah.
But as far as medical and social in the terms of being introduced to other environments to perhaps help him to adjust to what he had.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own little community, a very safe little community.
Yep.
But as I saw that deterioration, I knew that our lovely little community couldn't offer the
yeah.
ongoing medical support that he needed. It just went on and on. And we went from being in that location for 7 years with our circle of friends and
yep.
activities to having to relocate 400 kilometres away to Darwin
yeah.
and basically start to get the help that I felt that he needed and that I needed because I couldn't do it on my own.
Mm. Just for background, you said you've got kids and grandkids as well?
Yep, I do.
How big is the family?
My husband has 3 children.
Yep.
And I have 2 boys.
Mm-hmm.
The grandchildren are from my side of the family, although it's a blended family.
Nice.
So the 2 boys, one lives here with his family in mm-hmm. Darwin. He lives on a remote location. And so we don't see a lot of him, but he's still in touch with us, of course. And
yeah.
So support from family, I would say emotionally, yes.
Yes.
But they weren't in a position to, you know, Mum, we'll sit with Pop while you go and, I don't know, have a coffee, have a haircut, something. There
yeah,
was none
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, yeah,
there
yeah.
was none of that.
So it was pretty full on for yourself.
Pretty full on indeed. And the fact that it took so long to get the support that was needed,
mm-hmm.
that in itself compounded for me because I'm trying to be his support system.
Correct.
But I did feel very isolated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you're being the support system and you also needed somebody to support
yeah,
you as well.
It would have been really good. Yeah, yeah.
So what do you wish would happen in that state that didn't happen?
I wished he had had that surgery. And he used to say the same thing too. Because at those earlier stages he was aware that
yeah.
there was an issue. He was aware that he would say to me, why can't I remember things? So yep. he was cognitive enough to know that he wasn't remembering.
Wow.
And that's probably more confronting. I think it caused more anxiety for him
mm-hmm.
because he couldn't remember things. He couldn't remember names of friends. And
oh, wow.
That was the hard part
yeah,
for him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so your journey from there, you find out he's got dementia, you do all, everything goes on, you move on all the way to Darwin to get some support,
yep.
you get here. What has Dementia Alliance done for you since you've been here?
It's my involvement with Dementia Alliance has been relatively new,
yep.
although once we had the diagnosis officially
yep.
after the scans yeah. and what have you were taken, I reached out to Dementia Australia
yep.
and they were wonderful.
Wow.
They were really good. They provided lots of contact information
mm-hmm.
and resources that I could use. But because it was so overwhelming,
mm-hmm.
I probably at that point didn't maybe appreciate exactly what they had to offer. Mm. That for me, I'm probably a bit independent and like I can do this. Yep. And I did. I managed all right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what other support I could have maybe reached out for.
Yep.
It's there. It's there. And in hindsight, I would have actually asked,
yeah,
what can you do to help me,
mm-hmm.
rather than me saying, what have you got? You know, that sort of thing, this is my situation, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a bit, it was incredibly confronting.
So how long you been in Darwin for?
I've been here for 3 years now. We moved 3 years ago.
And so the life where you guys were, where exactly were you?
We were at Mataranka.
I've been in Mataranka?
Yeah, Mataranka.
The hot spring.
Yep, that's the one. Beautiful community, beautiful people. Just you become, it's like going to any new environment.
Yeah.
You kind of have to put yourself out.
Yeah.
And we did. We were involved in the fishing club. And I mean, I don't eat fish. I don't go fishing. And I don't like the smell of fish. But I was in that fishing club. And they're just lovely people.
Yeah.
The little museum and just getting involved with things. And my husband did too. He was quite able to open the museum up and, you know, do those sort of things and become involved. We were very entrenched in that community. It was wonderful.
And so leaving that environment would have been...
That was a challenge.
Mm.
Even though I had family here, they still had work and school and they had their own life. So we were somewhat left to our own devices, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
And while all that was happening, of course, my husband was deteriorating.
Yeah.
Ever so slightly. So then we started to connect, or I could connect with service providers,
yep,
where he could go for a couple of days respite, just a daytime, so that there were activities geared around someone who needed that extra support.
Yep.
That freed me up a little bit,
yep,
which was wonderful. But, of course, that was okay for maybe 12 months or so, and then he didn't want to go anymore.
Why?
I still, because he loved it, I still don't really know why.
Mm.
He just said, I don't want to go. Are you feeling all right? Yeah, I'm a bit tired.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was like, oh, for him, he could kind of make an excuse not to go. So that's all right. You have a sleep. And I ring them up. And
mm-hmm.
So that went on for a while. And then it was like, I don't want to go anymore. And he just refused to go.
And what did that mean for you guys?
Wow. That was my little bit of independence that I had for maybe two or three days a week.
Yeah.
That was gone. I went back to 24/7 as the care provider.
Wow.
And that was really, really challenging, because all the while, one of the things that dementia sufferers have is what they call shadowing.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is, they follow you everywhere. Everywhere. I have a sewing room,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I would be in there sewing and, you know, you have a feeling that someone's watching you.
Right.
Well, I would turn around and he'd be there at the door just standing there. And I'd say, you okay? Yeah, I just wondered where you were. Well, we have a little townhouse and it's not very big and mm-hmm. I wasn't going anywhere. But he just needed that presence, needed me to be there.
What do you think the presence does for him?
It's a comfort.
Yeah.
It's a comfort, because all the while with all the medications he was on, the anxiety was settled to a point, but not quite totally.
You reckon it's a side effect from some of the medication?
I won't say it's a side effect from it.
Yeah.
I would just say that if we have an expectation that medication will fix anxiety or mm-hmm. will fix whatever problem,
mm-hmm.
it certainly helped it. But it didn't alleviate it.
Wow, that is so deep. And right now, the one thing that I'm thinking is that you were thrown into the deep end straight away.
Oh, absolutely.
And you had no chance to prepare.
Nothing.
And there might be somebody else listening to this that might be going through the same thing. What would you say to them?
Oh, I'd say reach out where you can. Reach out. If someone offers to help, and people will. People will say, tell me what I can do to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't just say, oh, it's all right, I'm fine, mm-hmm. actually give them a task.
Yeah.
Can you come around at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning because I've got an appointment at the doctor and can you sit with my loved one?
Yeah.
Actually do it. Because I didn't do that. In a way, I wish I had. The only time that I did it when I really needed to, when I needed to have day surgery. I couldn't leave him there on his own. Mm-hmm. It was around that time that he didn't want to go to respite because I had that timing all worked out that he doesn't want to go. So I had to have someone come around. So if it was someone who was familiar, that would have been better.
Yeah.
But people, I think it raises the issue of society's acceptance of dementia, that we don't want to know about it.
Why not?
Oh, it's scary stuff, isn't it? I mean, it's like, oh, I don't know about dementia. That's for old people. Or it's, oh, I know all about that. Granddad had that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know one little part of it. You don't know what it's like as a carer, which you're basically going on that same journey. So two people walking the same path, one has dementia and one doesn't, because you're parallel. There's no separation other than that diagnosis.
Yeah. And I think many people, like even myself, I'd say many of us don't see it from that angle.
No, no. And it's very difficult to, some people find it very difficult to ask for help, to actually reach out.
So when you were in that situation, you obviously didn't ask as much for help as you needed. Why?
Why? Good question. I didn't believe that I had enough of a social circle to ask anybody. There were no friends because we'd left all them behind.
Yeah.
Family were here, but they were working. They had the children.
Correct.
Couldn't do that. There was really, other than to get some respite, mm-hmm. which I tried and did, that was okay until it wasn't, until he wouldn't go anymore, so it was really just the two of us.
And being in that situation, do you feel like there was any sense of fear of judgment for being able to open up and say, hey, guys, I'm going through A, B, C, D and I need help?
I don't know about the fear or the – oh. No, I don't believe there was the judgment. I think it was just – that's a really deep question and I don't know. I'm trying to think how –
because I'm trying to put myself in that situation and I'm like
– yeah.
If you ask for help today, you ask for help tomorrow. Mm. I'm a very independent individual, like you say you are.
Yeah.
At some point, you start to feel like, man, I shouldn't be asking for help.
I'm doing this too much. Yeah. Yes, yes, indeed. And that, I think that's probably, that is actually probably the answer, that I was a bit proud, a bit self-independent. I mean, my family all know I'm independent. You know? If I ask for help, they will come because they know mum can't move that or mum can't dig that or whatever. And they will do. They will always come. Yes, probably that, and maybe I was inadvertently caught up in that public opinion, the general opinion of not denying the dementia, but maybe denying my ability to deal with the dementia.
Ooh, that's deep. That's deep.
And I know that I covered up.
Yeah.
I diverted. I masked a lot of the behaviour before he was diagnosed. And it's a bit confronting to even to say that, and you don't know that you're doing it until you look back and join the dots. Yeah. And then you see, oh, yes, we'd have a conversation at a social gathering and he would make a statement right out of left field that had nothing to do with what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the quick calculation. Well, not too sure what you mean, hun. I get what you're saying. And you're linking that with such and such and tie it in. I think I'm a whiz at that. Tying what he said into what that general conversation was.
So that he flows,
to make him feel part of that and not to have someone judge him for what the heck's he talking about. I didn't want that for him. It was my way of protecting him, I think.
What part of it is it protecting yourself also? In your image.
Maybe it was too.
Because I see a lot of myself in you as you're talking. I'm like, maybe I would have acted the same way.
Yeah, and maybe that is. I wanted, I knew that he had some insecurities.
Mm.
And maybe deep down it was for me too. I suppose we do that for self-preservation.
Correct.
But I can see that I did that openly to protect him.
Correct.
To make him included, because he did socially, he struggled a little bit.
Yeah.
He would be the one at a function. He'd be happy. I could be doing anything at any function. He'd be happy sitting in the corner reading a book. He was just that sort of person. He wasn't overly social.
Yeah.
But if he was engaged in a conversation, I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's dealing with all of those human elements.
Yeah.
And then this damn dementia just creeps in and changes the whole dynamic.
I'm a big believer in gratitude, and I'm about to ask you very, very, very. I think it's a tough question. Hopefully, you can give me an answer. Out of this whole entire experience, with him having dementia and you having to be the number one carer and being part of the whole entire process, are you able to extract any moments of gratitude from that whole entire situation?
Out of the ghastly situation that it is,
yeah,
I am just grateful that I've always had him in my life.
Wow.
That because he's just wonderful. He was my Mr. Perfect. If you were to describe the sort of person he was wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely gentle, kind, loving, affectionate. He was just everything and spoilt me rotten.
Wow.
So for that, I'm grateful. I have to be grateful for that.
That is beautiful.
We had a wonderful relationship. We really did. We were together nearly 30 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
Congrats to that.
Yeah, you get less for that than whatever.
You know what?
Sorry. Oh, you better cut that bit out. Sorry.
You know, while we're on that topic, 30 years together, that's a big number.
It is a big number. My word, it is. And you know someone in that time.
Yeah.
You really get to know them. And for people who have been together for 30 years, they could see that relationships change. You know, the honeymoon finishes and then you get down to nitty gritty and it's like not always a happy ending. Ours just got better.
Here's a difficult question. In that 30 years, are you able to break it down into phases? I don't know if you can. Maybe you can say the honeymoon period was the first 2 years and then it was this season and in that season.
Okay.
Maybe we can understand.
Okay, the honeymoon period, right, first one. Probably 27 years more, 30 years minus the 18 months that he's been in a nursing home because life was a honeymoon. It was just wonderful. There was no from a career point of view, I was probably a bit ambitious, I suppose. But if I saw a job interstate and I talked to him about it and said, I'd really like to apply for that. How do you feel about moving? He'd just say, yeah, if you want to.
That easy.
Just like that. And we did it three times. We went from 20-odd years in Alice Springs and we went to Queensland and I worked with Rio Tinto. That was for 5 years. Went down to Victoria. I worked for Deakin University for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And around about that time, the grandchildren were growing up and started to be interesting. And so it was coming back to the Northern Territory. And we've been here nearly 10 years.
What's your career path?
My career path probably varied.
Yeah.
I trained professionally as a dental nurse, but after I finished that, I never went back.
Never used it.
Yeah, it's like what a waste of time that was. But that's all right. That's really good. And then I went at the odd jobs. I was lucky to be at home when the children were younger.
Yeah.
But moving to Alice Springs, I worked at the Joint Defence Facility at Pine Gap. I was there for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually where I met Max. And then when we moved to Queensland, it was working with Rio Tinto and in the mining industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it was there plus down to Deakin in Geelong that I was doing research contract management. So my focus on, I guess, from that career path type of thing, I'm very interested in research.
Yeah.
Just how grants work and how people apply for grants and what they do. That's something I'm very interested in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite an ambitious career path. And
it's covered lots of area, I guess, yeah.
Would you say that you're fulfilled from your career?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why? I think I had the support of my husband.
Yeah.
and that's vital.
Mm-hmm.
And I also worked in professional environments where it wasn't about the people dynamics, it was about the job. I had a boss once, and he'd said he wasn't interested in anything else that went on. We're here for the mission. And I put that into context in a lot of other jobs. I'm not interested in what should
the drama or whatever.
I'm not,
yeah.
not interested. I don't get into that. But I like, this is my job, mm-hmm. and I am here to do the best that I can. So I'm very focused.
Yeah.
And I'm focused in a lot of things that I do. If I have a project or whatever, I stick with it.
Get it done.
Yep.
Wow. I just want to go back to that relationship topic, because 30 years is still running in my head. And 30 years of being together with somebody, you get to know them on all sorts of levels.
You do.
And then that person catches dementia and you've never left.
Yep.
You stayed through the journey.
Yeah. It would never occur to me to go. It would never occur, just because it changed.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose that was part of my... that's the makeup of me. I suppose it gets back to, this is the mission.
Yeah.
that I will do this job, because, and I will do it for as long as I possibly can.
Wow.
That is, it was never an issue doing it.
Yeah.
I expect you can split it into two parts. The doing it wasn't the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It was how the doing it affected me.
Mm.
So there's two parallel ways of looking at it there.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking to do.
Yeah.
Some people can actually say they find the job incredibly, as a carer, incredibly fulfilling. I didn't find it fulfilling. It wasn't that. It was horrible to watch that person deteriorate.
Mm-hmm.
But I would never have turned my back on him. Never. Yeah. I was there, and that's what I was there for.
That shows great character.
Well,
and it shows integrity of who you are.
Well, that's lovely, but he's my Mr. Perfect. Why wouldn't I?
I just feel like maybe I'm wrong, but in this day and age, people are very quick to leave.
Oh yeah, and I do understand with different types of dementia,
mm-hmm.
that the person suffering from dementia can present in the most horrid ways. They do. They can be abusive. They can be violent. They can be. I mean, this disease does some horrible things to beautiful people.
Yeah.
And it can be very difficult. But I think that it, when people have made a commitment, or people have been perhaps, I won't say forced, but encouraged to make a commitment, a parent can say, "Don't ever put me in a nursing home."
Mm.
I think, before they do that, make that statement and put that burden, and I will call it a burden, onto their family, they really need to know, what are they asking their children? Because they're asking them, or telling them,
mm-hmm.
don't do this to me, but they're saying it as they are now, in their state of mind that they are now. Wow. But they have no idea where that's going to go to, how they're going to be reacting when dementia really takes hold.
Mm.
And nobody knows. There's no step one, step two. It doesn't work.
So
like
much
that.
Uncertainties.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a difficult one, that people are put in those positions. So the leaving, it could be that partners do leave and just say, "Sorry, kids, it's your job. I can't do this anymore." I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how they do it. If they stay, unless they've got support, and whether that's family stepping up,
yep.
because that's a big issue. Sometimes families will see mum or dad or whoever, siblings, taking care of a parent, and they don't do anything to contribute. And they'll be like, "Oh, but you're doing that wrong." But it's like, well, hang on, you're not stepping up to the mark. I'm doing my best. I'm drowning here.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that. How does a child who's looking, who's been coerced, I say, to look after the parent and not put them in the nursing home,
mm-hmm.
what do they do 5 years down the track? If they're married and they've got young children,
yeah.
and grandma or whomever is living with them, that can affect those children.
Okay.
So there's a lot of who leaves, who turns the, if it's turned their back on, or who makes a decision to say, I can't do this anymore. Now we're acknowledging defeat.
Yeah.
You have to go into the nursing home. Well, all hell's going to break loose. Because if they're cognitive enough, they're going to say, I told you not to put me in. So what do you do?
It's a tough one.
It is a very tough one. And it's not going to get easier with the numbers of people in the country now that have dementia.
Is the number increasing?
Oh, absolutely. There's over, someone will probably correct me, but there is over 420,000 people in Australia with dementia now. It's anticipated in the next 25 odd years there will be over 800,000 people.
Why such an increase?
Well, it's exponential because we're looking at how that's increased. Our population has increased.
Yeah.
We are all us baby boomers are getting a little bit older. So there's a number of people. It's just
I read somewhere that people are living longer as well.
And they're living longer. Yeah. Absolutely. But one of the key things, and I don't want to go off topic, but one of the key things with dementia, it is not specifically for the elderly. Anyone can have dementia. I will repeat that. Anyone can have dementia. Babies, young children, teenagers, people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. It is not confined to grandmothers and grandfathers and elderly parents.
I think we need to get educated on this because there's a lot of ignorance.
There really is, and it's really sad that people will shy away, that people, there's a grandma at the checkout and she's fumbling with the change. Now, she's trying to hurry because she knows there's a queue.
Yeah.
She's of a generation where you try to give the right money to people because it's going to make that person's job easy.
Mm.
Person behind just wants their carton of milk and loaf of bread and they want to tap and go and they're getting impatient.
Yeah.
Now we've got anxiety coming up. So this poor little soul, all we need is a little bit of
kindness.
Just kindness.
Yeah.
A bit of understanding and patience. The community, I will say, the community at large are the problem, but the community are the solution. Because it's about that awareness and being aware that don't walk past the sign that says, you know, dementia. Australia or dementia, whomever's promoting it, the Alliance, don't walk past it without at least giving it a thought that it can happen to anybody.
Well, how can we create a space where we can educate the large majority of people?
I believe it's word of mouth. I just think it's a conversation that needs to be had. Not the gloom and doom, but the fact that this is real. It is part of the community. There was the big campaign some time ago on the mental health with Are You Okay?
Yeah.
So you may remember when that was all introduced. And people will do that now because we understand that that is in the community. Many years previously, people didn't talk about cancer. There was no talk about cancer.
It was like a taboo topic.
It was and this is no different. So we're getting a generational thing here.
Yeah.
It went from cancer, it went from mental health, dementia. It is the number two killer in Australia.
Wow.
And the number one killer of women in Australia.
Women? More than men?
Yes. Now,
wow.
Why is that? We don't know. And that gets back to research. But these are statistics. This is, if anyone wants to go onto Dementia Australia website, you would be surprised the amount of information that is there that no one's ever heard of.
Why do you think people want to shy away from the information and they don't want to talk about it? They don't want
to. Yeah, because we don't want it to happen to us. It's a bit of fear of
unknown.
There's
a fear of unknown. Yeah.
And that can be the same as it was with mental illness.
Mm.
If I don't talk about it, if I don't think about it, it goes away.
But that's not the case.
And it doesn't go away. Who would have thought in our modern society that dementia would be the number one killer? We talk about heart disease, we talk about breast cancer, all these things that we think are the number one killers, and it's dementia.
You know, this is scary. You know why this is scary? Because if you've already got a perspective that I don't want to talk about it to avoid this happening to me, you're used to keeping it on the down low. And if it does happen to you, you don't want people to know about
it. That's right.
And
that's right.
And you want to protect yourself and your image as much as possible.
And that's what dementia sufferers in those early days will do. They know something's not quite right. They know that they're forgetting. It can impact what they do at work. It can impact their social life, how they interact with people. They may have anger outbursts to their friends.
Yeah.
The friends have never experienced that. Mm-hmm. So now we start to get a little bit of community pullback that they kind of distance themselves, thinking that you know, so-and-so's had too much to drink and look what he's like when he's been drinking.
Yeah.
Whereas it may not even be anything to do that, you know. It's a very big unknown.
And this is what I'm thinking right now. Is that maybe we as a community need to learn how to separate the condition from the individual. Maybe that's the problem.
Well, maybe, yes, yeah.
Maybe that's what people are so afraid of, the label and what the label is going to do to their life, that if we learned as a community to separate the condition from the individual, we can love the individual regardless of the condition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you recall recently, the last 2 years, Bruce Willis. Now, Bruce Willis was, we were told, had aphasia.
Mm.
Now, not many people know what aphasia is, but aphasia is part of behavioural variant frontal temporal dementia. Mm. Bruce Willis has dementia, but it wasn't called dementia. It was called aphasia. So you'd have to go along, look it up, oh yes, problems with speech, what have you.
Yeah.
It was dementia. It is dementia. Robin Williams was the same. We never heard that. We heard more on the suicide as opposed to why he felt the way that he did after the diagnosis. So it is a bit of a social cover-up. We have the media saying that Bruce Willis has aphasia, and yet you think from that high-profile person that everyone knows, if it was known he had aphasia, you tend to perhaps start to desensitise people to what that topic is, that, oh, what is dementia? Oh, it's this. Then you start to, it's knowledge. It becomes knowledge. If people have a knowledge of what it is, it doesn't mean you're going to get it. It means you can identify and empathise with people that do have it.
Yeah. There's I'm a big believer in the Bible, and it's a Bible verse that came in my head that says, people are destroyed because of the lack of knowledge.
There you go.
And perfect. And I just wanted to talk to you about your belief system, and you've got a really interesting perspective of life, and I want to know where that come from. What do you believe in? Do you believe in anything?
Well, I'm not a religious person, but I have a very strong connection with the law of attraction. I believe in me. And my ability of what I can do with my life, on how I face the things in my life, which maybe that's the reason that I can be with my husband like I am and care for him and love him, because I have that connection, but because it's part of my gratitude that I am grateful that I have him. I think we are more powerful, I'll use that word loosely, but powerful than what we really think we are. And it's all about positive thinking. If we tell ourselves we can do it, we'll just do it.
The law of attraction is an interesting one, because I've seen videos of people saying, if you're feeling negatively, just go in the mirror and say something positive and just repeat it.
Yeah.
I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good, I'm good. Do you think that works?
There's various levels within the vibrations that you have. You can be from the depths of despair to the heights of euphoria. And you can't jump from the bottom to the top, but you can. This one can make you feel better than that one can make you feel better than that.
Wow.
You just do it in the steps. Someone once said, if you're not feeling good, think about a baby. Preferably one you like.
What if you had a baby? That's not a good thing. That could work for some people.
Exactly. Think of one you like. Yeah. So it because it makes you smile.
It does.
It makes you smile, whether it's your children or your grandchildren or your kitten or your dog, what doesn't matter. When you're not feeling well, look at a nice picture. I don't like watching movies that don't make me feel good. I don't want that shock factor. I don't like that anymore.
You don't like scary movies and stuff
no
like that?
No way. No, I can't stand it. I used to. But because it would, or something that's sad, my grandson visited last night and he's focused on being a pilot. And so he always has me watching Top Gun. Well, I was watching Top Gun last night, right? Thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm crying at the end of it because it was so sad. It was nice, but it was sad.
Yeah.
And it was like a feel good. And he looked at me and said, "You're crying, aren't you?" I said, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I feel good about it." So it was. It's a happy sad, I guess. But I just think that to keep a positive vibe on your life is a lot better than to take a negative. Why would you make yourself feel sad? Why would you feel bad? Why do we people in a group get together and we talk about ailments? You know, oh, you've got that. Oh, mine's worse than yours. I've got this. Oh, I can't stand that. I don't like it. I don't like it. I might have more issues you than just, Women's Weekly, but I don't.
You've just reminded me of a bus ride that I had just maybe like 10 years ago when I was still in high school. I was jumped on this bus and I was heading home and the two ladies behind me. And they were debating on who's diagnosed with more things.
There you go.
I couldn't comprehend what was going on. It was a flex. It was like whoever's diagnosed with more wins.
Yeah, the one who dies first wins. It's like I don't get it. I just think let's just look. Yes, we may have these issues. We're getting a bit older. God knows I am.
Yeah.
But does it matter? Do I have to walk around with that mental attitude that, oh, God, my back's worse today. Oh, my back, I'm going to sit down all day. Why would I do that? It doesn't make me feel good.
Mental burden.
It is. And it gets back to that law of attraction. What you think about is what you attract.
Mm.
So your back's getting worse. Well, if your back gets worse, what did I tell you? Of course it's getting worse because you've just talked yourself into it.
But then you can justify and say, I told you so.
I told you so. That's it. Told you. That was going to happen. I knew it. Well, maybe if you said I'm in good health.
Yeah.
You know, I'm strong. I'm powerful. I'm perfect. I'm everything. I'm all these wonderful things.
Yeah.
Why can't we do that? That's just my way of – that's how I see it.
How do you feel about external validation?
Good question. Sometimes I think we do need a pat on the back. We need to be told that you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But we also have to have a mindset that I'm doing the very best I can and today is a win. And look at your wins and celebrate the wins. It might be just a little thing. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a huge win. It can be I got to park right out the front today. So it's
that's
like,
a win.
What a win. And there's no parking meters. That's a double win. So
small things.
They're small things because they add up. And if you can look at your day, look back on your day and say, well, what was my win today? You know, I didn't burn the eggs. I didn't do – they're little things. But they have to go – to me, they go a long way compared to my life is down the toilet. You know, it has to be better.
Have you ever asked yourself that question? Why me?
Yes, I probably have over certain things in my life. Mm. I probably have. But I've come to realize that, and this isn't a spiritual connotation on it, it's just like because I can deal with it, because I can manage it. It's not hard. And I can turn them into positives. If this hadn't happened, this wouldn't have happened. And I do that. That's become the norm for me. That's how I look at it.
So in a sense, you're saying you are attracting these situations, these circumstances, because you've got the power within you to handle it.
I believe so, yeah. Which probably sounds a bit self. What's the word? Effacing. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, but the opposite of that would be what? To roll over and say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't see the point in living your life with the, poor me.
Victim mindset.
Yeah, yeah. Because all it does is make you feel in such a negative way. There is, we are here for a short time, and it's making the most of it all, and it doesn't always go your way.
Yeah,
but it's how you deal with that, how you attack it, if you like.
Yeah,
you know, this is my problem. How am I going to fix it? There is a way of fixing it. There's always an answer. And for people with religious convictions, maybe that's when you ask for help. Maybe that's what you do to say, I'm having a hard time. I really need some help.
You just mentioned people with religious conviction. Now it got me thinking about you. Early on we had a chat and you were saying to me that you grew up with a Catholic background.
Yeah, I did. Yep.
And you kind of spared away from it.
Yes, I have actually.
Why?
Well, that's been over a period of time. I don't know whether it will be perhaps socially accepted that I would give my full views.
I'm accepting it already. I'm accepting it. I'm accepting it.
Because no,
this is a safe space. We accept everything.
And I the last thing I would want to do is to offend anyone. That's not in my nature to do. But I don't believe, oh boy, I don't believe that life is determined by an invisible being who is supposed to be all good and all loving that would allow such things in the world to happen. From a Catholic point of view, why do the newborn babies who aren't baptized have to sit in limbo? Why? They're innocent babies. So it's because of the sins, and I get that. Well, I get the church doctrine, and I don't mind – you better cut this bit out. I don't mind the idea of there being a God,
yeah.
Right? There is – whether we say God, the universe, spirit, it's a name. So I don't mind what you call that entity.
Correct.
But I have a problem with a church that does things in God's name. The written word of God. Well, hang on. We've got a Genesis, we've got a New Testament, we've got an Old Testament. Which one is God's word? I thought that there were only 10 phrases that were given from God, those commandments, to live by.
Yeah.
Whereas we now have the gospel according to whomever.
Yeah.
We've got this. There was a pope, was it the 4th century pope, that rewrote certain things. Well, yeah. Hello, hang on. That's not the word of God. But we are told the Bible says. But if it's written and not edited and rewritten again, how is that the word of God?
What I'm catching from what you're saying is that the doctrine doesn't align with original text.
Absolutely. And that comes into the church element of it.
Yes.
It's the church's interpretation of it that I have a problem with.
Yeah.
That's it. And
I agree. I personally agree. Mm. I agree that a lot of what religion is nowadays doesn't actually align with what people need.
That's right.
And
it's made up on the fly in a lot of instances. If we're talking about wars and abortion and women in the community and all these different things, it's like decisions are made on the run, you know. And then someone will pull some obscure verse from the Bible and say, because it's written. Well, hang on, who wrote it? Is that the word of God? Just because you say it's the word of God, I just have trouble with
that. Are you speaking from personal experience? Did someone use this on you?
No, this has been my own. Honestly, this is just, with age comes wisdom.
I can see.
If it's wisdom, it might be not wisdom. But I just feel that when I look at that, again, the law of attraction, if I want the good things to happen, I have the power within me. Now, the Bible will tell us that we are from God. Therefore, we have that ability, that spirit, that drive. So there's no disputing that.
Correct.
Well, if I am made from that same stuff, I have a power within me.
Correct.
And that comes with my thoughts.
Correct.
And with my will, what I want to happen.
Mm.
And then how I present myself to society and the actions that I do and the way that I live my life. and what I can manifest, if you want to call it like the manifesting.
Well, here's a theory for you. Let me know what you think about this theory. What if, so a lot of what you said is the doctrine, they've got this man in the sky, almighty or whatever. What if we took him out of the sky and said that this, it's not a man, it's a force, it's a power. This energy resides within you. What does that do to you?
Oh, absolutely. And that I believe.
Okay.
I do. I really do believe it. That energy is there. And it's how we use it and how we interpret it. And I'm not, it's got nothing to do with turning up at church on Sundays, but it's how I live my life. If I'd live it under those, not teachings, I guess that essence.
Yeah.
That essence is in me to do the right thing. And if I want something, manifesting, if I want my husband to be in a position that he is, and I would say that, I want him to be calm. I don't want him to be experiencing any form of anxiety where he is. That's all I want for him. Well, that to me isn't a bad thing to ask for.
Correct. Have you been able to dig deep and use some of that energy to manifest something to do with your husband's situation with dementia?
Have.
How does that go?
My husband is very calm.
Wow, it worked?
You bet. Oof. Now, was it the medication or was it me? we will never know. We will never know. But and look, and it doesn't worry me that it wasn't me.
Yeah.
But it was the something outcome that I really wanted. That was the outcome. I couldn't – look, in the perfect world, I would say, you know, please get rid of dementia. Wouldn't we all want that? Wouldn't we all want illnesses to be gone?
Well, why didn't you make that prayer?
Well, I did actually. That one didn't quite work. I'm working on that. That's going to take a little bit more time. No, it's not quite, you know, we're going to get there, but that's one. But one at a time. At a time.
Yeah. I am actually interested in what process you went through to manifest the calmness out of him. What do you do? Do you close your eyes and make a prayer, or do you just go for a walk? What do you do?
Well, it's usually I'm so happy and grateful now that my darling husband is in the nursing home and he is calm.
Just like that.
Just like that.
It's just a phrase.
And it becomes something that you don't just say it, oh, yeah, I better say that. I haven't done it today. Mm-hmm. It becomes part of your psyche. It just becomes there. You know, I'm happy and grateful that whatever it is, that's my little mantra.
Yeah, the transformation by renewing your mind.
And you have to change. I believe it is a mindset change.
Yeah.
That, and again, it's keeping the negative out. I'm so happy and grateful that I've had a great day in the garden. I'm happy and grateful that I went shopping and I had a really nice conversation in the frozen food section with a lady I'll probably never see again. There are little things that we can be grateful for, and sometimes that in itself can make us feel better if we're not feeling as perhaps as happy as what we would like to be.
Let me hit you with this question. When's the last time you cried?
I cry every day.
Really?
I do. I'm not going to do it here, right? I cry because I'm very sad that I am at home and my husband's not with me.
Wow.
That's a sadness. But I guess I deal with that because I'm happy and grateful that he is comfortable and looked after. Yeah. So I think that it doesn't matter, all the positivity that you have doesn't stop you from feeling the sad, but it's not dwelling on the sad.
What's the difference?
Ooh, I think you can look at that and say, if you dwell on it all the time, it becomes too all-consuming. And I suppose I'll say I've trained myself. It's just repetition. Anything.
Yeah.
You learn two ways. It's sudden impact or it's repetition.
Yeah.
And the repetition of being grateful for the things that I do have now. And then still feeling the sad. The sad doesn't go away. But then that's me being human too. You can't.
You're still allowing yourself to be human.
Yeah, you have to be. Yeah. You have to. We have to have a cry, but we also don't need to bog ourselves. Well, I try not to bog ourselves down. It's not cry, cry, cry. Oh, I've been there. Yeah. Sat on the couch, drank coffee, and binge watched TV in my PJs for 3 days.
3 days in a row.
Yeah, 3 days. Marvelous how much binge watching you can do.
When was that? I'm probably interested in this story.
6 months ago. Wow. It's only recent that I was in a really low place and I tried my damnedest to get out of it, but there was nothing coming through. And on the third day, it was almost like a bit of a revelation that, okay, you've had enough of this. Now get off that couch.
You know what word I thought you were going to use? I thought you were going to use the word resurrection.
Oh, I don't know about that. Oh, now we're getting the religious thing going.
Because you started, but you used revelation instead.
Yeah, it's a revelation. Yeah, she's not resurrecting, no way.
You're like, on the third day, I resurrected, I know.
Hallelujah. No, it wasn't like that. It was get yourself off that couch. You've got to sweep the floor, you know. It was like, come on, girl, clean up the house. For someone who was so fastidious, my house was a mess. So that was like, right, you've done this. Now this is not the way to live your life. So anyone who's like that, and I mean, I'm not going to judge anyone who can sit on the couch all day. I mean, good luck, really. But it's like if that's not where you want to be, there is an alternative, and the alternative is.
I used to do this. I don't go through low states very much lately, but when I used to go through very low states in the past, what I used to do to myself, I used to tell myself, I say, okay, you've got. If it's really, really, really bad, I would say, okay, you've got 18 hours or so to be as low as you want and just feel whatever you want to feel. And I'll put a timer and so forth. Yep. Or you got half a day to do whatever. And then what will happen is when that alarm goes off, it will just be a flick. Yep. Like,
great.
Okay, I've given myself enough time to just because I feel like you stay in a state much longer when you're battling. I should be out, I should be in, I should be out, I should be in, I should be out.
Exactly, because it's an inner struggle.
Yeah, it's an inner struggle, yeah. So then I've learned to just tell myself, all right, you want to be in this state? Okay, stay in there then, but I'll give you a time.
Yep.
You've got 30 minutes to be in there. Yep. And it works like a charm. Yep. So, and I saw that time go down from 18 hours, whatever, to 12 hours, to 5 hours, to 30 minutes. And then now it's like, okay, 5 minutes.
Yep.
And then 5 minutes in that, and you, you know what's funny? When you try so hard to feel low, like, okay, now I'm going to feel low. Yeah. Your mind's like, okay, get out of there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I've heard people do a very similar thing when it comes to grief.
Mm.
I will allow myself 2 weeks to grieve for the loss of someone special.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Now, I don't know. I think I grieve for my husband all the time, but I don't know how I would go with that. And I find that's a very strong character that can say, right, I've allowed this time, but that's making sure that they didn't get themselves bogged down. So it's a very similar thing to what you said. This is my time frame.
Well, it's funny because when you get to whatever you tell your mind, there's a force. I don't know where it comes from. Yeah. It just takes you out.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this amazing force that says, all right, your 12 hours is done.
Yep.
Out.
And that, to me, gets back to the power of attraction because you've set a limit.
Yeah.
After 18 hours, I'm going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Whether that's right or not, I don't know. But you've set a time rather than and it's how you're not saying after 18 hours, I am no longer going to be depressed and down in the dumps and whatever.
Yeah.
Because regardless of whether it's, you're going to be or you're not going to be, you've used the words miserable, down in the dumps, whatever. It will continue. But if you elevate it, I am no longer feeling this way. I am going to be feeling better. I am going to be more positive. My life is on the right track. All those sorts of things.
In all the sentences you're saying, you know what's common? The word I am.
I am. Oh, very powerful statement. It's a very powerful statement. It's having faith in your ability, the I am. Yeah, not I will do or I might or I should or I could, but I am and I will.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. Absolutely. What books are you reading?
I no, no. I do. I read lots of it. Well, I do a lot of audiobook stuff, but yeah, a lot of them.
What books are you reading?
What am I reading? Well, yeah. I'm listening to.
Yeah.
And it's probably a bit out there, but it's Ask and You Will Receive. And that's from.
Brian.
No, it's Esther and.
Esther Perel. Hicks. Yep. Hicks. Yeah, that is.
The words of Abraham.
Abraham Hicks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and okay.
Yeah.
I've got that book.
Very interesting.
I've got that book, yeah.
That one. There's and The Power of Attraction. I'm trying to think. Jack Canfield does some good. It's all based on positivity and power of attraction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I listen to that all the time because that to me is that constant reinforcing of the positivity. And I've been doing that for the last 6 years probably.
And it's worked for you?
Oh, yeah. How would I have – we had a 13-acre property in Mataranka.
Mm.
The house or the property down the end of the road had been on the market when we first arrived there.
Yeah.
And it's still on the market now, to my knowledge, all right, 10 years. With that property, and they don't get sold very often in Mataranka. It's not a turnover like it would be in Darwin.
Yeah.
I would walk that property and say, my house is sold, my house is sold, my house is sold.
Yeah.
We now live in Darwin in the perfect house that suits us. Over and over again.
That was your mantra.
We sold it in less than 12 months. I needed to sell that because Max needed, there was a drive.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, I'm sick of this, I want to leave. I didn't want to leave, but I knew we had to go where he would have help. Now, that probably sounds a bit out there if somebody heard me say that.
I know.
Now, were we lucky
mm-hmm.
that we had a buyer? Very lucky. Was I responsible for making that happen? Because that's what I really focused on, was selling the property.
Well, what is luck? If we wanted to ask that question.
Faith or fear, isn't it?
What is actually luck?
Yeah. It's who knows? And is it luck? Is it luck or is it just having faith that I have the faith in my ability to have this, to have the world, the universe, join those dots for me?
Maybe luck is the name we're giving it because we don't understand the process.
We don't know any other. That's right. Yeah. How does that happen? How does my wanting mm-hmm. go to the agent that went to this, that went to this? What caused that sequence of events for that buyer?
Yeah, synchronicity for sure.
Yeah.
I only have one problem with you.
What's that?
You didn't do it for your neighbor. He's still trying to sell his property.
Poor love. He didn't have the faith. not faith. it's really interesting. It's really an interesting thing and mm-hmm. anyone could say that, look, it was just the luck, you were just, you know. Well, maybe it was. Maybe,
well, go create your own luck.
Exactly. Yeah. We have to take a bit of responsibility. The world, when you move to a new location,
mm-hmm.
nobody is going to knock on your door and say, hey, I'm your new best friend.
Actually, I've been waiting for someone to knock my door.
They don't do it, sorry. No one did. You've got to get yourself out there and do it. You have to make those connections. We have to make things happen. We really do. And that can be in all sorts of things. I mean, I needed to have more support for Max. I needed him to be looked after.
Yeah.
I needed that. And I had to do something about making that happen.
And you made it happen.
I like to think I did. Went a long way to it. Yeah.
Wow. You are something else.
Oh, dear.
I want to ask you this question. So with all these years of relationship experience that you've got, what do you think is the problem with now's age relationship, new age? Why do you think people can't stay? I was checking the rate of divorce the other day, and it was almost 50%.
Wow, is it?
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm like, what's going on?
Maybe
how can you stay together for 30 years and have all this and still keep going?
Yeah.
Why can't we stay together? Why are we struggling?
I wonder, are people maybe
why is this generation struggling?
Too hard? Are people trying too hard? Like is it too easy to get out of? I mean, I've been divorced. This is my second marriage.
Yeah.
Why is it compatibility? Do you like each other to start with? Are you in too much of a hurry to get into a permanent relationship because you're lonely? I think looking at why do you want to get married? Why do you want to be with someone. If that person you I believe I was truly blessed. Maybe religion comes in here, I don't know. But I was truly blessed with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I was very, very lucky. Now, is that something that everyone finds? I think you have to be tolerant of people, and everyone probably says that. But if the things that that person does and you don't like it, why are you trying to change them?
Mm.
It's a question I asked myself once. It's I am not prepared to change the way that someone else wants me to be. These are my standards. This is the way I want to live. I am not prepared to change. What gives me the right to expect that person to change? And that, to me, is perhaps the big thing that we can go into a relationship or a marriage and think, oh, look, it'll be right. I'll get him to stop smoking or drinking. We'll be right. No worries. He'll stop.
Mm.
Well, why? You won't stop doing, I don't know, Pilates every day. I don't know. You're after Pilates again, you know. So it's like, how do we as individuals expect?
Yep.
Do we have the right to expect that person to change? No, we don't, because we don't believe that person has the right to expect us to change. We are who we are, warts and all. If you don't like that, it's been lovely knowing you, mm-hmm. but I don't believe there's anything in this relationship. Whereas if you continue on, you're living in hope. Why would you live in hope? Why would you not just be with that person because that's the only person you want to be with, and you don't see that they're disappeared off to Pilates, or you don't see that they're, you know.
Yeah.
And if you don't like those standards that they have, well, what are you attracted to? You're trying to change potential. Them, so why are you potential? The hell. No potential, no way. Potential to break your heart.
That's the word I keep hearing on the street. Oh, he's got great potential.
Great potential, great potential. And you see, that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
What does that tell you? If I change him, he'll be perfect. Perfect. Well, why can't he be perfect the way, or she, the way they are right now?
Mm.
So I think we look for those. We're looking for perfection. We're not seeing it, but we've got it up here.
Yeah. But this is a bit of a dance, because I had a chat with this individual and they were telling me that if I don't date her, then when's the next time I'm going to find somebody close enough for her? So there's, and then I'm going to be alone by myself for a long time.
Yep.
And so you're like, okay, is this the only options I've got?
Yep. Yep.
Do I just take from what I've got?
I think that's where you need to look at yourself and be happy with your own company for a start.
Mm.
Because if you're afraid of being alone, and you've got to go on dating sites and you've got to have somebody and you swipe left or right, that's a bit sad. You're picking someone by the way they look.
Mm.
Not, you don't even know them. So you can say you've had 10 dates on Tinder or whatever and they've all been duds. Well, you just went by what you were looking at.
Yeah.
Whereas.
No, they wrote on the profile, they wrote up 6 foot.
Oh, yeah. Come on, everyone lies. Even I know that. Oh, dear. Yeah, I don't know the answer, but I do wonder on the longevity of a relationship that is on Tinder, unless, I mean, they work, of course they do, and we know that they do, that sometimes you just connect and that's what you're looking for. It's that connection. But I do think in the meantime that you have to be really comfortable with yourself.
Your own skin, yeah.
You know, when I was divorced first.
Yeah.
First, I've only been divorced once. But a friend of mine said to me, oh, you know, you're all on your own. And I said, you're all on your own. Life must be terribly lonely for you. And I said, yeah, I'm on my own, but I'm not lonely.
Two different things.
Totally different things. And maybe that's where people who have the need to be with someone get them crossed. You're kind of like, it's okay. If you, it's okay to go and be on your own. Sometimes we're kind of nice people. We all think we're nice people.
Yeah.
We like ourselves. But why aren't you happy being on your own?
There's something you said early on that really touched me, and you're talking about the quality of your relationship with Max. And that got me thinking between whether you, when you go into a relationship, you think longevity, you think about lasting long, as long as possible, or you worry about the quality of the relationship. Because I think it's a bit of a dance there where sometimes we, as humans, we want to last the longest, where the quality of the relationship is rubbish.
That is, I think that's it. People don't like to admit defeat in a relationship, so they'll stick it out. Mm-hmm. And that's always really sad. With my relationship with Max, we knew each other beforehand. We worked in the same environment. Mm-hmm. Not directly, but he was one of the guys and I was doing what I was doing.
They said on day where you work.
Oh, well, they were wrong, weren't they? Because it can, but there was never any, we would perhaps have lunch together.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But if one of my friends that I, the colleague I was with, would say, look, hey, let's go and have lunch at the dining facility. And say, yeah, I'd go. And it would be, I'm not going to be there. Mm-hmm. If you're waiting for me, don't wait because I'm having lunch with someone else.
Yeah.
There was never any direct connection. If something had to be said at work, I really avoided it because I didn't think that that work personal relationship should cross over.
Yeah.
Totally kept it separate. And it just became rather natural that if he'd had something to say, he might have had to work late. Yeah. So he would come by my office and he would say, I'm going to have to come home a bit later. And I said, that's okay, I'll see you later. And that was it. Mm-hmm. But no, how are you doing? What are you up to? No, none of that.
Oh, none of that stuff?
No. I was very
direct,
kind of adamant on that.
Yeah.
I just think that it worked better. Work was work, home was home. It had to be, that was me. Because I think then you get a crossover, mm-hmm. and that's not necessarily a good thing because then you're taking home to work and work to home. There has to be. And ours was a bit complicated because we worked in the same environment. So it was there anyway, but we didn't talk about work at home. We just, no, that wasn't. Work was work.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, it is.
Not to take the problems at home.
Yeah, exactly. Because that creates just tension, whereas home was home and we enjoyed each other's company. But to build the relationships as far as how you feel about somebody, mm-hmm. and how that develops, I believe, and probably because we did work together at once, well, before we got together, mm-hmm. We were friends. It was just a friend without any romantic connection at all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was still married. He'd been divorced. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And he thought I was married. So there, we didn't cross over into those personal relationships to know who was what and where what they were, was nothing like that.
Yeah,
so we were friends, and then, when I was on my own, and because he'd been divorced, and we just sort of connected through a mutual friend, and that was it. And it was like, wow, where did that come from? Because I wasn't, after being in a marriage, I wasn't looking for anybody.
It's when you're not looking that you find the best thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why do you think that's the case? When you stop looking thoroughly to find something is when the best things come up.
I think it's getting to, it gets back to that liking yourself.
Yeah.
But you're not looking. You're not looking for someone to fulfill you. You kind of just have to be, for me, I was enjoying, I had my son at the time was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I was enjoying the time with him. I was just enjoying, I'll say, my freedom,
mm-hmm.
and no restrictions, but I could do what I want.
Yeah.
And I liked my life and I learned to like me, that because I'd been there for someone else, now I was there for me and I kind of liked me. So it gets back to that, to me, it gets back to that liking yourself.
Yeah.
And then you can, then when something happens, it's like, oh, he's all right. You want to go? Yeah, well, I'll meet you for coffee. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it wasn't with any intention.
Yeah. Well, I can see that working in terms of relationship, but does that work in terms of finance?
Of?
Finance.
Finance.
Yeah, that doesn't work in terms of attracting wealth, it doesn't.
Ah.
$1 million. I'm not looking at you. $1 million. You kind of have to be intentional when it comes to finance and career.
Finance. That's a very interesting one. Yeah. Because you could say, by the 1st of December, I would like $500,000 in my bank. Right? There's your intention.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you keep saying it over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere along the line, and this is where you have to really focus in on your intuition.
Yeah.
Because somewhere along the line will be a little, I don't know, what would you call it? A little sign, a little something. You might read an article in a paper and it's got, and it's the aha moment. There's a little opportunity presented itself. Where did that come from? I didn't even see that. I wonder if that's worth following up. Now it's up to you. It may not work, but you won't know unless you follow it up. It might lead to the possibility of $450,000 in the bank by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's following your intentions and focusing on what you want, but it's also looking at your intuition. And we don't do that. You ever had that thing about, I should have done that? Why didn't I do that?
Yep.
And it pops into your head very subtly. And it's trying to tune into those things.
It gets a bit noisy, especially if you run a business.
Oh, yeah.
Because I should have is a thing that runs in my head all the time.
Yep.
I should have finished that. I should.
Yep.
And so then I've got to kind of quiet the mind to hear it.
And let those things drift in.
Yeah.
And just try to recall them if they do. Sometimes they're in and out before you know it.
Mm.
But I've had that for myself. I have had that. Wanting to have – I have a goal, that I had a goal, and how am I going to get to that goal? And I read an article in a book and there was something in there and it was like, oh, my God, I had the goosebumps. And that was the target I followed and I got what I wanted.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's your goal right now?
Oh, no, I won't tell you my goal now. You mind your own business. You go get your own goal. the power of wanting, right? Mm. And it's really interesting. Mm. The power of setting goals is not to tell everybody else. They are yours. They can build up stronger in your mind because you might say to your colleague over there, I want my $500,000 and I've just found a way to get it. And while you're thinking about it and starting to put it in place, he's shortcut you and he's beat you to it. So watch him. It's possible.
Mind your own goal, Jacob. Wow.
Yeah. So it's, I guess it's just on different how you approach stuff.
I really love the chat we had today. We're coming towards the end of the podcast. I just want to ask you one last question. You've lived a quite eventful life.
Indeed.
Love your experience, learned a lot along the way. Would you say you're fulfilled? Are you fulfilled from the life that you've lived so far?
Two parts to that. I would say yes, absolutely, but I'm not done yet.
Mm.
I still have more I want to do. I still believe that I have more to give. Now, what form that's going to take, I don't know. But I would like to make a difference somehow. I don't know what avenue yet. I guess I could be, I've not been shown that direction yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that's what I want to do. And I believe that direction will come to me. It will come. I'm watching for my intuition. You know, what is it telling me? Do I go this way? Do I go that way? So I focus on that. But am I fulfilled up to now? Yes, I am. My life is good and I am grateful for my life.
Mm.
It's good.
I guess the preceding question can only be, what's your definition of fulfillment?
To have an inner satisfaction that I may not have made all of the right choices, but the choices I made were with the right intentions. And I think for me, if I can look back at my life and see that every decision I made, be it right or wrong, has taken me to the next decision.
Yeah.
So sometimes they're not always good decisions, or the things that happen aren't always good.
Mm-hmm.
But if they've brought me to where I am now,
yeah.
I am very blessed. I am very fortunate to be surrounded by people I care for and who care for me. And I find that very fulfilling.
In a sense, if you look at it from that direction, then you've never made a mistake in life.
Oh, I've made heaps of them. You bet I have. I've made some doozies. But.
Hear me out. Hear me out.
Okay.
The reason why I say mm-hmm. that is because you are who you are and where you are because of everything that happened.
Absolutely.
So in a sense, even mistakes
yep.
were a blessing in disguise.
They were. Absolutely. Everyone, every decision I made,
yep.
be it good or bad,
yep.
has taken me to the next one. Now, during the time from making that decision to when the good time come, we're talking a few years mm-hmm. here and you start to think, oh, my God, why mm-hmm. did I do that?
Yeah.
But it eventually, and I think that gets to that wanting better.
Yeah.
To have an inner striving for better
mm-hmm.
and not expecting it to fall in your lap, being aware that these little opportunities have presented themselves and you let them pass. So it doesn't hurt to take those little opportunities and try them out. Not always going to work. You might make a business decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it might turn out to be the wrong one. Well, all right, you gave it a go. I think don't beat yourself up.
A bit of grace, eh?
Yeah, yeah. Just don't be hard on yourself when you do make mistakes. We're all going to make them. We're human. It's just part of the deal. But I think it's looking to improve all the time. I've made mistakes in relationships. I didn't do it on purpose. I did what I thought was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But then I moved on and you improve. Constantly striving.
Have you heard of the saying that says don't make permanent decisions for temporary situations?
Oh, yes, yes. And let's face it, life's pretty temporary, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So just watch what it is. Yeah. Go with your gut feeling. How does it feel when you're doing it? If there's something that stops you, what is it? And if you don't know what it is, but that's your intuition telling you, oh, maybe not such a good idea.
Mm. So let your inside become your compass.
Yeah.
Your intuition.
Very important. I think they don't teach kids this stuff at school. They don't teach them to watch.
Open up school for intuition, man.
Yeah. That's the next thing. Podcast number 27. But yeah, it's. I think that goes a long way. And it might sound a bit airy-fairy to people,
mm-hmm.
but we are in control of a lot of things.
Mm.
But as soon as we start to tell ourselves that it's out of our control, well, it is. Because you've just let it go. You're going to then be making decisions based on what other people want or think you should do. It's like with children. Parents can tell you. Now, what I want you to do is you'll do this and you'll do that and you'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because it's a good thing for you, the child, but as the parent, it's going to make me feel really good if you do that.
Yeah.
And that's something, that's a whole thing. I have those discussions with my 16-year-old grandson on those things, not trying to undermine his parents by any means. But to just, if you're arguing, that's probably why you're arguing and you want to come to Nan's for 2 nights because she'll feed you with whatever you want. So that's one of the things that he has to kind of deal with that. Mm-hmm. And all children, I'd say children, all I think everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
Watch why you're making the decisions that you're making
mm-hmm.
and just listen to that inner voice because it's telling you something. And we don't do that. Some people don't. I wouldn't have had a clue about that.
In 30 seconds, last question.
Okay.
In 30 seconds, if you could give an advice from your rich life that you've lived, what would you say?
Oh, crumbs, 30 seconds. Gee.
30 seconds.
For someone who talks underwater. what advice? I guess it sounds a bit of a cliche, but be true to yourself. Make your decisions for your reasons, and if those reasons you believe are right, do them. If they don't work out, don't beat yourself up. Nobody ever deliberately makes a wrong decision, we like to think.
Mm-hmm.
You do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jill.
Thank you very much.
This was a pretty fun episode.
It was great, yeah, indeed.
Hopefully we have you back in the future. And I've got a million questions. Don't worry. Like, I didn't even touch my question book. Can you realize I didn't even touch my notes?
Oh no!
That tells you that we've got tons of things we can talk about. And I just want to thank today's sponsor, Dementia Alliance, for today and coming together, and this episode, and Vibrant Culture as well. And yeah, thank you for everybody for joining in and tuning in. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at the Discover You Podcast and follow us on Instagram and on TikTok. Thank you so much for being with us, Jill.
Thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Peace out. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.